Welcome everyone to the 2018 E3 Vookcast. Today you're joined by me, Chris, Josh, Luke and Andrew as our usual host, Stephen. He's off jet-setting abroad, as you do, living the high life, so he's left it to us today to cover the E3 from a Nintendo perspective. So I'll go around and introduce everyone. So, hi Josh, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. It's always fun to be here.
It's always good fun to have you on, that's for sure. That sounds weird saying this is my first time technically hosting, so... But anyways, and Andrew...
You're doing a great job.
Yeah, cheers. And first timer on the Vookcast, let's put a warm welcome out for Andrew. Good to have you on.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Very good. And we've actually, this year, and I think last year as well, if I remember correctly, we've got our own E3 correspondent in Luke. Good to have you on, Luke.
Yes, last year and this year I went through the hell of E3 and... I'm here to talk about it.
Very good. You've braved the war of the E3 show floor yet again, and you've survived and lived to tell the tale.
That's it.
So in that case, let's start off with the Nintendo Direct, which has become a bit of a fixture in recent years of Nintendo, not doing a physical conference like the other major companies at E3. So the Nintendo Direct, I'm just going to do a bit of a whip around to start. What was everyone's favourite Nintendo announcement from this Direct and why? Josh, I'll start with you.
Oh, it's got to be Smash Bros.
Yeah.
Any Direct with Smash Bros, everything else is getting overshadowed for me.
Yes, fair enough. And was there anything in particular that you liked the look of what we know now to be Smash Bros Ultimate?
Well, yeah, the big character reveal was big. I didn't even mean to make that joke. But yeah, the big reveal was Ridley. Who's a character who I've been waiting for forever, and I've been annoyed every time Sakurai makes an excuse like he's too big or he won't fit or whatever. But oh man, I was so excited to see him, and they look like they've done a really good job of implementing him in the game.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's almost become, well, it has become something of an internet meme for some years now. How long has the Smash community been begging for Ridley in the game?
I think since Melee, because he appears in the opening cutscene fighting Samus. And so ever since then, people have been kind of like, whoa, wouldn't that be cool to see Ridley? But I don't think it became sort of meme status until Brawl, when I think that was when we got the first time we ever heard the he's too big reasoning. And then from there, like, the reasoning was just kind of weird, so... Everyone just rolled with it, and it turned into a massive joke.
Yeah, well, now Smash Bros. Fans all over the world can finally get their hands on and actually play as Ridley in the next Smash Bros. So we've all got something to look forward to there, as well as the, you know, every character in the existence of the Smash Bros. Series making an appearance as a playable fighter, which is pretty exciting. Andrew, I'll ask you, what was your highlight of the Nintendo Direct?
It's probably going to be pretty cliche, but Smash Brothers as well.
Yeah.
And not that there was a whole amount of other announcements to choose from, but yeah, Smash looks absolutely amazing. Having all the characters back is going to be pretty great. So yeah, definitely Smash Brothers was the highlight for me.
Very good. What characters are you looking forward to playing as?
I'm a Little Mac fan, so I've already seen a couple of short clips that have made some good changes to him, so that makes me pretty happy. But yeah, also looking forward to having Wolf back as well. I've always been a very heavy Fox and Falco player, so having that extra third option is always nice too.
Yeah, was Wolf in Brawl, do I remember correctly, or was he Melee?
He was in Brawl. Yeah. Yeah, that was his only appearance.
I know they spent a little bit of time saying that for the Star Fox characters in particular, that... as with all of the characters, have totally revamped their final Smash moves. Is anyone disappointed at all at the removal of the Landmaster?
No, not in the slightest.
No, get that out of here.
I once lost a Smash Brothers Brawl tournament thanks to the Landmaster, so happy to see it go.
Bit of a sore point. Okay, we won't mention the Landmaster.
Yeah, a bit of
war
a sore
then.
Point.
Okay. Very good. Well, Luke, having... obviously you've seen the Direct and you would have seen a lot of these things firsthand on the show floor in Los Angeles. What were some of the highlights for you?
Out of the Direct, it was everything not Smash Brothers. So I'm not a big Smash guy. I enjoy the series, I really do, but I'm not as devout as some other people are for it. So I honestly felt that whole section dragged on far too long. It could have been its own dedicated thing, like all those sort of changes. But for me, it was just, you know, Daemon X Machina, you know, Overcooked 2, you know, seeing the first sort of gameplay of Dragon Ball Fighter Z, that was cool. Wasteland 2 showing up, that was a bit of a surprise. I didn't expect to see that in there, so yeah.
Yeah, it was a real ballsy move from Nintendo to open their Direct with the footage and gameplay of the Machina game with that real pounding metal sort of soundtrack. It was almost a bit jarring and disorienting, sort of thinking, are we watching a Nintendo Direct? Are we watching something from some of the other conferences? So, yeah, it was a bit of an interesting way to open.
Certainly a bit of a puzzling opening.
Yeah, it was quite different. And I thought the overall vibe of the Direct, sort of the first half of it in particular, was all over the shop. Sometimes, or usually, the Nintendo Directs are very focused in how they present their sort of the games and announcements, but the first half it was sort of here's all these games that are coming out later in the year, and then obviously as we've mentioned, the second half was a big focus on Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Yeah, it was a really weird direct like that, like just cutting around so much for the first part and kind of casually dropping some announcements in a sizzle reel, and then a really slow run through of like everything you could possibly talk about Smash Bros.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else noticed this, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. I actually felt like this Direct was one of the least polished directs I've seen. Mm, I even noticed definitely. There were a few jump cuts in the Smash Bros section during the interview footage. I noticed a few jump cuts, which it's very minor in the grand scheme of things, but Nintendo's normally very polished, very slick, but I felt it lacked a little bit of that. Not to say it was a poor presentation, but it just didn't seem to have the usual Nintendo level of shine.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There was something a bit off about the Direct, and it kind of didn't have a big reveal, I guess. Like, we knew Smash Bros. Was coming, but aside from that, it was kind of flat, and they focused on some weird things. And then the second biggest thing would probably have been Fire Emblem, and that was basically a stealthy way of saying it's not actually coming this year like we thought.
The problem is, though, that all the Directs we've gotten over the past, what, year or so, they've all had the, you know, the headlines where they just blast through all the news and then they dedicate a few minutes, you know, to one or two or three games per Direct. Whereas last year was the spotlight, they called it, for E3. Calling this a Direct and treating it like something that we know is not a Direct, I think, threw a lot of people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, overall, Smash aside, I thought it was a pretty average showing as far as Direct goes. I mean, perhaps we've been spoiled in the past with that sort of blast nature of the amount of announcements that tend to come through, but yeah, I just thought the whole thing was just a little off opening with two, you know, a very niche game followed up by a DLC for, you know, another relatively niche sort of title, and all sort of before we get a real introduction or anything. The pacing just all felt a bit strange, and there wasn't really anything new announced, and I suppose Mario Party aside, that was there any real new thing we sort of got from it before it went into a deluge of Smash Brothers. So yeah, not certainly not their best effort, I don't feel.
Yeah, I tend to agree, but there were some pretty cool things, as we've covered already. There was the announcement of a Nintendo Switch exclusive Mario Party. There was some pretty cool looking footage of the new Fire Emblem game, and of course there were some pretty big announcements of games that we already had an idea of, you know, that they were coming to Switch, but we didn't know when or official announcements. Of course, there's a phenomena of Fortnite dropped the day of the Direct, so that's already had over 2 million downloads. The Adelaide-developed Hollow Knight, that's finally launched on Switch, which is just fantastic. And then we've also recently had the expansion for Splatoon 2. Now, has anyone had any hands-on time or played any of the Splatoon 2 expansion, Fortnite or Hollow Knight for that matter?
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time with Fortnite, actually. And I totally forgot that was even revealed at E3 because I kind of just took it as a given after it leaked.
Yeah.
And that probably ruined one of their biggest announcements. But I never played Fortnite before, but I figured it's free. I'm on the Switch half of my free time anyway. Let's just download it. And I wasn't sure at first, but I played a few hours of it, and now I'm really hooked on it.
I thankfully have been a little too busy to worry about any of that stuff, so that's in my backlog. Probably not Fortnite, but definitely Hollow Knight and the Splatoon DLC.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of Fortnite since it came to the Switch. I'm still pretty terrible at all of those Battle Royale style games, but yeah, certainly keen to give it a bit more of a try. Yeah, I never ended up actually finishing the Splatoon campaign, so I might have to get back into that before I worry about the Octoling DLC.
I'm in the same boat there, both with Splatoon and the Battle Royales, so I'm definitely going back to Splatoon 2, the single player content. Even without finishing that, I've bought the expansion because I'm a bit of a loose unit like that. But then also Fortnite, pretty ordinary. I was pretty thrilled to get second place the other night, so I've nearly got my first Battle Royale. And when I finally do, well, that's if, not when, actually, that'll be cause for much celebration.
We'll have our own special celebratory bookcast.
Yes. I'll dedicate a 2-hour bookcast special to a blow by blow recount of my first Battle Royale and force everyone to sit through and marvel at my
lack of skill.
Yeah. I was going to put it a bit softer than that, but yeah, that's pretty accurate. Quickly moving on, Luke, you alluded to this as well with how there was such a heavy focus on Smash Ultimate. What are you most looking forward to with Ultimate?
Depending on how many new characters there are, that's normally the big thing for me. Seeing all the characters from Brawl who got scrapped that I loved playing, like Snake and Pokemon Trainer. I almost said Snackamon Trainer. Combine them into two. But yeah, Snake and Pokemon Trainer. They were my two favorite characters in Brawl, and seeing both of them get cut from Smash Wii U and 3DS, that hit me hard. But now I've got, like, my two favorite characters as newcomers, Inkling and Ridley. I've got Snake and Pokemon Trainer. It's looking good in terms of the roster.
You're just about in Smash Heaven, aren't you?
All I need now is for it to be confirmed Smash Tour is never coming back.
Righty-o. What about you, Andrew? What are you most looking forward to for Ultimate?
Kind of following on from what Josh said there, I really am hoping to see some, you know, substantial single-player content come through. I know the Subspace Emissary mode wasn't amazing, but it was, you know, an interesting sort of take on it, and the cutscenes were really good, and I really hope that they bring back some sort of interesting single-player content to get through like that. And then I suppose apart from that, it's just, yeah, having everybody, all the characters back is great, and, you know, Smash Bros. Has probably been my most played game over the last, I don't know, almost 20 years since it's come out. It still gets played probably weekly between my friends and I. So finding all this, you know, slight and subtle changes to each character that we've sort of, you know, mastered over the decades is going to be quite interesting to delve into. So, yeah, I'm sure that'll keep us busy for months and years to come.
And Ganondorf's got a sword.
Yeah, I know. That'll be interesting. It's nice to see he's a little bit more than a Captain Falcon clone now. So, I like that they've differentiated him a little bit.
Yeah, they seem to have done that with, well, pretty well all the characters this time around. So it'll be pretty cool to see how they handle, well, sort of hands-on. Like myself, Luke, you're not big on the Smash Bros. Series. So is there anything that catches your eye about Ultimate, or it's just one that you're not terribly enthused about?
Well, I mean, I can say, having actually played it, I'm looking forward to the game when it comes out. I said I enjoy playing the game, the series, but I'm just not, you know, a devotee Smash player like some other people that I know. So in terms of what catches my eye, though, you know, it's just more Smash Brothers, which is a good thing across the board. So
yeah, sure. And you had mentioned before, and I agree with the time spent on Smash Bros. Ultimate. Do you think that Nintendo spent a little bit too much time of the direct showing Ultimate?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's one of those things. It's always a balance, I suppose, showing off new things and you know, meeting fan expectations and such. But Ultimate, like, when they started deep diving into, you know, slight variations, like, do we really need to know that Olimar's, you know, helmet cracks when he takes damage but then heals almost straight away? Was that something we really had to know in the direct? Or you know, when we got deep dive on assist trophies and you know, things like that. Like, some of that stuff could have been in its own direct later in the year. Probably just did too much of every section, which sort of bloated it out.
Yeah. On the other hand, perhaps it was Nintendo showing a lot of respect and a bit of a love letter to the Smash devotees, and especially its popularity on the esports circuit, especially with Melee. Perhaps it's a bit of a deep dive and a focus on, we're trying to make this the well, as the name suggests, the ultimate Smash Bros. Game that will finally dethrone Melee from the pro circuit. So perhaps it was a bit of a love letter to fans of the series, but for those who aren't as quite hardcore on it, perhaps, yeah, as you say, a little bit bloated and a little bit too much, but still pretty cool overall. But of course, Luke, you were in the fortunate situation of being able to go hands-on with a lot of exciting games coming to the Switch. And we'll start off first. EA normally doesn't get everyone's motors running, but we'll start with FIFA 19. How was your hands-on time with FIFA 19?
Yeah, so I mean, I got to play through two matches with it. The first one I played outdoors in the scorching Californian sun, which was not that fun. The second time, though, I got to play it indoors in some beautiful air-conditioned, comfort. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not a sports gamer. It's not my thing, but I enjoy picking up a game or two every now and again. It played beautifully. It looked a lot better than last year, which is surprising. I didn't think it would look too different, but it does. But it was smooth. The presentation overall was well ahead of where it was last year. And I didn't see any checkerboard faces or anything like that. So that's always a plus.
Do we know what EA are doing, or if they're addressing the sort of online aspect of FIFA? Because I know the online matchmaking was a bit lacking in FIFA 18. Do you know what or if they're doing anything for FIFA 19 in that regard?
Yeah, so what they've done is they've completely sort of overhauled the game top to bottom. But for those that want online, they've created their own system to do it. So instead of having to rely on just, trying to find a friend, they created their own invite system. So friendlies is now going to be possible in the Switch version, which obviously that didn't exist in FIFA 18. But FIFA 19 will offer that for players who want it.
Oh, fantastic. So, yeah, so for those who are into the EA Sports, especially FIFA, it sounds like we've got a bit to look forward to with some improvements there. But, of course, one popular platformer that hit the PlayStation by storm, last year, I think, the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy is not too far away from hitting the Switch. How's that shaping up?
Yeah, it was surprising. I honestly expected it to be a little bit, not glitchy or anything like that, but I thought it was going to be just a sort of very watered-down version across the board, but artistically, it's identical, apart from like the jaggies that you see because of the lack of power between them. It's almost identical in every way to the PS4 and Xbox One version. So it played beautifully. I suck at Crash Bandicoot games in the modern day. Whether or not that was true back in the day, I can't recall, but I apparently suck now. The only sort of thing that did notice is there's some sort of effects like reflections and such that are really dialed down. And especially because I got to see the Xbox One version and then the Switch version like within 5 minutes. So I really noticed the differences between the two. But yeah, if you're a platformer fan, end of June, getting the three Crash games on Switch with one sort of finished off level that was cut from the games initially and one completely new level developed by the guys at Vicarious Visions.
Nice. Now, Josh and Andrew, did you play a bit of Crash back in the day?
I was more of a Spyro boy, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I was always more Spyro than Crash. I tried the PS4 version when it came out last year, but those games are they're difficult. Either that or my gaming skills have gone down significantly since I was younger.
No, fair enough. In that case, we'll move on to the next game, Luke, that you got a bit of hands-on time with, and I'm very excited to hear what your thoughts are on this one because I thoroughly enjoyed it on PC. Wolfenstein 2, how did that shape up?
Surprising is the best way to describe it. So it was a weird setup they had. They had it in handheld mode, but they had a pro controller attached. I assume that was just more for player choice rather than this is the way you have to play it with a pro controller. It was strange because, playing with a pro controller but on the Switch screen, especially because, it wasn't just in front of my head, it was down on a little desk still. But it played beautifully. So the game was running in handheld, so it was running, less without the features that it gets when it's docked, and it was smooth as It does support adaptive resolution, though. So when the game gets intense, the resolution will scale down, so it keeps that smooth frame rate. But yeah, I mean, I didn't honestly notice it too frequently, but it is something to be aware of that it does do that.
Yeah, well, that sounds pretty promising, and perhaps the bizarre setup they had with handheld and the pro controller was sort of their way of showing off that, hey, look, we can get this running at a stable frame rate in handheld mode. Have a think about what you'd look forward to on the docked version. Josh and Andrew, did you play Wolfenstein 2 on any of the other platforms last year when it came out?
I played the first one, but I figured I'd just wait for the Switch version for the second one because I didn't want to buy it twice.
I actually did pick it up on Xbox One and play through it. Yeah, it's a really, really great game, so it's going to be a great addition to the Switch library.
Definitely. Any questions for Luke based on his experiences?
How many Nazis did you own?
I would have to guess somewhere between 25 and 30.
That is a good number.
Did you have like one of those big big knives and you just sort of etched a notch on the wall next to you every time you let a Nazi have it?
Yeah, unfortunately, the guys at the booth didn't appreciate that. They sort of chased me out after I tried.
Ah, well, you know, what can you do? But no, that's sounding very promising. That in handheld, Wolfenstein 2 runs at a pretty stable frame rate. Albeit at an adaptive resolution, but that is to be expected with such a demanding game. Now, there's a whole heap of games, Luke, that you spent a bit of time with at the E3 show floor. Were there any in particular that stood out for you in particular? And Josh and Andrew, I'll get you to have a look at what Luke has noted down and have your questions ready to fire away.
I can tell you now that there's three games that sort of grabbed my attention, and honestly, most of them, I mean, Smash is in there, that's cool, but Planet Alpha, which is being done by Team 17, the strange thing about E3 and even PAX, if you go to PAX, you know, people that play the games will find they get 10 minutes on a thing and it says, thanks for playing our demo, or, you know, they can't go through a certain door or something like that. With Planet Alpha, the demo was so massive, I spent half an hour playing it.
Oh, jeez.
And I didn't realize half an hour had passed.
Wow.
So I was so engrossed in this game, and there was not a single written word on the screen, not a single spoken word, nothing. Just me and a character on the screen, and I lost half an hour to it. And when I sort of stopped and I went, oh, geez, that's half an hour. I need to play other games at Team 17's booth. I didn't want to play other games. I wanted to go back to it. It surprised me. So Planet Alpha is an atmospheric side-scrolling puzzle game. So you play as somebody, whoever they are, you know, don't know yet, find themselves, you know, crash-landing on a planet, and there's nothing around you to say where you are or what's going on, and you just have to start exploring. And eventually you discover that there are certain pedestals that you can stand on that let you rotate the planet. And as you rotate the planet, things change, and when you do this, those changes trigger, you know, a robotic alien invasion, and then you've got to run and hide from them, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and I want more of it.
Yeah, wow, that sounds rather intricate. I suppose, yeah, if you spent half an hour on the E3 show floor just getting lost in it, we can only imagine what the full experience would be. So what were the other couple that stood out for you?
So the other one is another indie game called Semblance. So it's been featured on the site before in the weekly announcement wrap-up. And in Semblance, it's a platformer game, and you play as Squish. He's a tiny little blob. He's got two eyes, and that's about it. He's very, very generic in his appearance, but he can squish. That's his name. But it's not just him. It's the entire world you can deform. So if there's something up high you need to get, but the platform doesn't quite reach it, go down underneath, jump up into the platform and bash it up higher into the world. If you need to get down somewhere or there's a trap that you need to avoid, you bash the world around into various shapes and directions and, you know, cut off lasers or whatever and make your way through and solve puzzles that way.
Yeah, right. Oh, goodness. So it sounds like we're pretty spoilt for choice with some pretty quirky sounding platform-ish sort of games. So you've certainly piqued my interest, that's for sure. So what's number three then?
Number three is Starlink. The one with Star Fox. So I knew I was going to like it last year because I like space games. Like I grew up on the N64 and that on Rogue Squadron and you know, Episode One, Battle for Naboo. Right, you know, space shooting games were always sort of my thing. And when it was announced last year as Switch, I was like, yeah, cool. You know, I'll play it. I'm okay with it. And then they announced Star Fox to it. I'm like, okay, now it really has my attention. And I got to play it at both the Nintendo booth and the Ubisoft booth. And my God, was it good. So there's basically two ways of playing it. There's the free-flying combat where you're shooting throughout the skies or space. And then there's sort of the, and I know people are going to hate me, the Landmaster mode where you're on the ground as a tank sort of thing. When you're doing it, you can jump, you can barrel roll still. You know, if you jump in the air and then dodge, you'll flip to the side to avoid attacks. You know, it's all adaptive. So I was fighting, you know, you've seen the E3 demos on the planet trying to shoot this, you know, giant scorpion thing that's walking around, whatever you want to call it. And it summons down some, like, ice elemental creatures. I had ice rockets equipped. They don't deal a lot of damage. So, you know, pause the game, unclicked the ice rocket off the side of the ship, clicked on a fire one, more damage dealt, got through it so much quicker. It's really, really cool. And you know, being able to play digitally on the Switch, I think it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, right. Now, Josh, you're the Toys to Life expert among us. What do you think, just based on the vision that you've seen of Starlink so far?
I kind of ignored it last year, to be honest, because I've kind of assumed at this point that anything Toys to Life is just going to disappear. I've had some traumatizing experiences. But this year they came in strong and they've got a Star Fox that's got people hyped. So it's looking pretty interesting, but I just can't really justify spending all the money and filling up all my space with toys again. I do not have any space between Skylanders, Lego, Disney, Amiibo, whatever else I've forgotten. I do not have any room at all. And these ships look awesome, but they're so big.
Yeah, so they had them on in, you know, I posted a photo onto the Facebook page of the R-Wing from the game, and it is massive.
Mm.
Like, it is a giant ship. The good news, too, is that if you do go that physical route and you do have them, when you attach them to your controller, they are super light. There's no weight to them at all. So,
because they look super uncomfortable in all the footage where they've got this massive ship just plonked on top of their controller.
Yeah, it doesn't look that appealing, but it's not so bad. But the thing that I like about the game is that, so on the, when I played at Nintendo, there were no physical figures around. It was all digital because I was in the sort of media area and we had all the different games on the same Switch. But at the Ubisoft booth, that's when I was doing all the figure changing. So for me, I'll get it on Switch and I'll be going all digital. I won't be buying any physical toys except maybe the R-Wing, just because that's a cool thing.
Is it hard to switch around the weapons when you're going digital? Because, I mean, imagine when it's physical, you just click the one you want on and that's it. But on the...
No, it's the exact same thing. So when you pause the game to do it physically, if you do pause, you don't have to. You know, physically, you just pop it off, pop it on the new piece. With digital, you just pause the game, go to the ship menu, select the weapon that's there, brings up a menu of all the other ones you can choose from, select the one you want, and you're done.
Yeah, right. Well, that's sounding quite exciting because I think the thought from a lot of Nintendo fans who may have been tuning into that Ubisoft conference, especially when they got Miyamoto on the stage to present him with, you know, the physical R-Wing, and of course showing Star Fox in that trailer for Starlink, I think that certainly generated a fair bit of interest. So that's very promising to hear that it actually plays well, and the Toys to Life concept of it, you know, is more than just for show.
Yeah, the thing that really grabs me is that they keep saying it's an open world. What it is there's 7 planets in the game that you can fly around and fly to and all that. Each planet is about 3 times the size of the map of Far Cry 5, the recent one.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Wow.
So that goes to show you how much there is to explore, and it's freedom. So so in the demos that you'll, if you watch the videos, you know, there's markers showing to go here and do this and do this, right? That's very scripted for that type of environment. But in the full game, in the final release, that stuff won't exist. You'll be told to go to the northern pole of a planet, and then that's, you know the planet and you know the general area, but then you've got to find, you know, things as you go.
Yeah, right. So Jeez, let me get this straight. There's seven planets, yes?
Correct.
All of which are larger in terms of exploration size than the map of Far Cry 5, correct?
Correct.
Gee whiz, I think there's going to be a few people spending some hours in this game. So, if you like exploration with some huge-ass exploration, I think you've found your game in Starlink. So, look forward to that one, folks. But I'm also wary that there's so many other games that were at E3, and there are some that I'm very interested to ask you about, Luke, but I'll open this up to Josh and Andrew if there's any other games that have caught your interest and you want Luke's thoughts on.
Yeah, did you play Dragon Ball Fighters? Yep.
Yeah, all right, hang on. Andrew, we'll start with you.
I have to go to the obvious one, Pokemon. I'm a huge Pokemon Go fan, and obviously the original series as well, so just curious to get your thoughts on that. And do you play Pokemon Go at all, or are you much of a fan of the original series?
So definitely a fan of the original series. I made a joke with the PR person from Nintendo that I own the To Be a Master CD TV series. So I own that still. I'll be honest here, I have never even downloaded or purchased Pokemon Go from any app store, either Android or Apple. So I played Pokemon Let's Go. It was less exciting than I was hoping for, but also more exciting than I expected it to be. So everyone keeps talking about the Pokemon Go integration, but really, all that really is just how you catch Pokemon. You just, you know, do the throwing motion. That's it.
Yeah.
And you can overthrow. I learned that. You can, if you throw too hard, the ball just goes sailing over and you're done. So, wandering around the forest, which is the only part I was allowed to wander around in, you know, walking through the grass, you could see the Pokemon everywhere, you know. And at one point, I dashed past an Oddish because I didn't want to fight it, and I barreled into a Kakuna, and I ran away. And as soon as I left the thing, a Pidgey flew into me. And I saw them all on the screen, and I was trying to get around them, just couldn't do it. But it was still fun, and I actually got to play the game with the Pokeball Plus controller as well. So that's how I played it. And I will say that thing is tiny. It is a very small thing. It's slightly larger than a golf ball, in all honesty. It's a very small controller. I'm not a Pokemon Go player, but Pokemon Let's Go is definitely going to be one that I'll pick up this year for sure.
Interesting. Anything else, Andrew?
Team Sonic Racing is probably the other main one that's got my eye. I really like both of the first two of those. So.
Yeah, so do I, which is why I'm disappointed in this one.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's called Team Sonic Racing because you race as a team. So your team is you and two other people or two other racers. And as you're going around, if I pick up an item, and if I don't have a need for it, I can sort of put up a thing saying, hey, I've got an item if someone needs it. And then another race can go, oh, yeah, I need that. And if you already have that same item, you power up that item to get, like, the second level. And if the third racer has the same one, you get, you know, three levels. The sort of problem is it just was so confusing. Like, there was no explanation to anything. The game was trying to tell me stuff. And obviously, it's a demo. It's a very, you know, packaged release, trying to get all the information across in a short period of time. But it just came across as being way too confusing for a kart racer.
Yeah, it sounds really confusing and just overcomplicated.
Yeah, I mean, if it was all about just you and, you know, two other guys racing, you know, in a team, and, you know, like they do in sort of F1, there's always one or two from the same driving team on the track, that would have been fine, but they seem to have thrown in more stuff than it needed. How that plays out in the full release, you know, we'll see what happens there.
I don't want to have to coordinate with other people when I'm playing the game. I just kind of want to race.
So do I, and that's why this sort of let me down, is because it's like, I just wanted more Sonic Racing, you know. I didn't need all these extra things added to the game.
But that's disappointing.
Well, was there anything else, Josh, that caught your eye that you're interested in hearing more about?
Yeah, did you happen to get hands on with Dragon Ball FighterZ, 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 whatever it is?
FighterZ. Yes, I did. I got to play that. I played that for like 20 minutes. I honestly, what's that group that do it? The Eurogamer guys that do the whole comparing videos and frame rates and all that sort of stuff. I'm not them.
Digital Foundry.
That's the guys.
Yeah.
I'm not them. I'm not too smart on that sort of stuff, but I can tell you it looked damn near identical. to the PS4 version.
That is good to hear.
The load times were a little long, but again, it could just be because it was a build and not the final release. So it can never take load times into any sort of equation when playing E3 stuff. It ran buttery smooth the whole time. I didn't notice any lag. There was no input lag, which, you know, for a lot of people in fighting games is super important. It just smooth across the board. And it, as I said, it looked beautiful, you know, punching out Freezer and knocking him flying off the screen into a mountain on the side, and then having, you know, Android 21 come bashing in straight after and picking up the fight from there. It was good.
Nice. Sounds like, fighting fans have got a fair bit to look forward to there. And I'm not much of a fighting game fan myself, but I have watched a fair bit of the anime, so I'm very curious to hear about your time with My Hero Academia. How was that?
It was not the game I was honestly expecting. I thought it was going to be a bit more of like the Naruto, you know, story-driven stuff. It may end up being that, but it was a 3v3 arena fighter, and I'll be honest, I sort of dropped off the anime after the first season because it was one of those ones that just wasn't moving fast enough for me, but... I played as, I can't think of his name, the guy with the, he does the fire and ice. He was my main. And then I had Deku and the girl that does the gravity manipulation as the sidekicks.
Yuraka or whatever her face is. Yeah.
So you pick a main and have two sidekicks, and they can come in and do like a support attack for you every now and again. And that was pretty much it. You know, it's just a generic 3D fighter. With the powers and stuff. So pressing like a heavy attack had my guy throw like an ice thing down onto the ground. And if, you know, the opposing character was in range, they'd take damage. But pressing and holding would have him like start, you know, Frozone sliding around the map, you know, on his thing of ice. So there looks to be a lot to it. I honestly just don't know enough about the series to give you any more detail than that, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like it's probably not quite up to the level of polish or perhaps content as the Dragon Ball game. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see more info about that closer to release. So that's a lot of the Nintendo stuff that you went hands-on with. Did you get to play or suss out any non-Nintendo stuff on the E3 show floor?
Yeah, I played a lot of non-Nintendo stuff as well. So let's see, where's my list of things?
Here we go.
So I got to play Battlefield 5, Horizon 4, Madden 19, Tomb Raider 3, Spider-Man, Days Gone. Yeah, Spider-Man was cool. I got to play Project 1v1, which is a new game from Gearbox. I got to play... Resident Evil 2, Soul Calibur 6, and a little game called Cyberpunk 2077 I got to check out.
So. How was that?
So I didn't get to play it. It wasn't playable by anybody, but it was a 50-minute gameplay demonstration of somebody actually playing it in the audience with us. And my God, was it good.
That corroborates with pretty well everything else I'm hearing from every other prominent games journalist out there. So, yes, very jealous. Go on.
I can't do it justice just talking about it because it's one of those things you have to sort of witness. And hopefully they release that video, you know, like a video of it soon because it was just that good. But basically, you know, in the build that we were shown, played as a character called V, and, you know, opened up with a mission of her and her partner raiding, a hideout of these guys that, you know, basically kidnap people and then strip them of their cyber enhancements, to sell on the black market. But they accidentally kidnapped the wrong person. The wrong person being a very, very rich person. And it's just kept growing from there. And the world itself was, there was not a single load screen at all in the game. Witcher 3 had load screens. When you go into a town or out of a town, there'd be a bit of a load screen. Not a load screen per such, but a stutter. This had nothing like that. It was smooth across the board. Gameplay-wise, first-person events was really cool. Hacking into other people to try and, you know, determine information. Being hacked into yourself to see if you're lying. It was so cool though across the board. I can't wait for that to come out, you know, in 2025 or something like that, when it by the time it finally releases.
Yeah, geez. Well, Well, in that case, everyone, mark in your notebooks this little indie game by the name of Cyberpunk 2077 to look out for in the near or distant future whenever that comes out. Josh, Andrew, and I are not remotely jealous of what you've seen, Luke. So
not the slightest bit.
Yep. Thanks. Thanks for that.
Well, I haven't even told you about Smash yet. That
would briefly before we move on to sort of the general E3 show floor as a whole. How was your time with Smash Bros. Ultimate?
It was good. I mean, again, I'm not a big Smash player, so I don't know if, you know, the characters that I played at from old games had changed drastically. But I played maybe half a dozen matches. I played as my boy Link, who's my general fighter whenever I have to pick somebody. I always go for Link. Played as Splatoon Girl. She was a heck of a lot of fun to play as. I played as Snake, because I always thought he was cool. I gave Ridley a go to see how Ridley would compare. Got to play in the new maps as well, or stages, I suppose you call them. So the Great Plateau and Moray Towers. Got to play through both those. Yeah, it was good. The one thing I did notice about Ridley, and so answer me this, is Ridley a boy or a girl? Because I'm pretty sure she was female.
No?
Because I thought she was the Space Pirate Queen.
Are you thinking of the Metroid Queen?
I thought she was the Pirate Queen. The space pirate.
Pretty sure she's...
No!
I got to play as Ridley. And Ridley is slow. But not slow as in, like, sluggish slow. Slow as in every time you go to do an attack, Ridley... Like, if you do a basic punch, Ridley will pull, you know, the arm back and then punch. And when it connects, it's devastating. But there's, like, a few moments between when you try and when the punch, you know, actually begins... that you could get, you know, hit back. And that's what happened to me. It's how I noticed it. So it's just one of those things. You've got to sort of just be on the ball for it.
Yeah, those are the characters I love playing. The really heavy-hitting ones where you only need to get a couple of hits in. It might be hard, but you get a couple in and you do some massive smashing attacks. So it's good that my favorite character is going to be my favorite play style.
So hopping into an A-player brawl as one of the heavy hitters is the best... So I imagine Ridley's going to be very, very good for those large-scale matches.
In the trailer, when Ridley's gameplay is shown off, she has that one attack where she grabs and, like, drags across the ground. Like, you see that in person, and it looks absolutely brutal. So I can imagine doing that move in, like, a sudden death or, you know, 1v1 match or something in a tournament, and just seeing that happen to the other opposing character is going to set people off.
I think perhaps the main and most important question about Ridley in Smash Bros. Ultimate is, like featured in the CG trailer, can we stab and impale Mega Man?
I didn't try it. I didn't fight against Mega Man when I played as Ridley, so I can't say for certain.
Yeah, I think his down special is an impaling tail attack.
I honestly didn't see anything like that, so I'm going to assume it's just for, you know, dramatic purposes.
Remind us all, when can we get Smash Bros. Ultimate in our sweaty little hands?
December 7 is the current release date.
Very good. Any last-minute questions from Josh and Andrew about Smash Bros?
Did you ask them when the Waluigi DLC is coming?
You know, it didn't actually occur to me because, as characters, I don't like Waluigi in the slightest.
Blasphemy.
Yes, I'm known for being blasphemy. I can't even speak. I'm so tired. I only just got back this morning from LA. Like, I did a full day at the convention center, then jumped on a plane and came straight home, so... I'm very tired.
Yeah, that's fair enough. In that case, we'll ease into how was the E3 show floor, especially from Nintendo this year. So you were there last year. It's been 12 months since then, and the Nintendo Switch has had 12 months of continually impressing us all with its releases, the quality of its first party and third party and indie games. This year, What was the general vibe like about Nintendo at E3?
It varied depending on the hour of the day. So last year, when the show floor opened, the public got in at the exact same time as industry and media, which made for a very confusing and congested show. This year, it was very different. On two of the days, media and industry got 3 hours early entry, basically. So on those days, you could wander on those days and that time, you could wander through Nintendo's booth without sort of worrying too much. and you could just go in and see what they were showing. Last year was very different because they were very enclosed with their Mario Odyssey, New Donk City sort of booth setup. Last year was cool because they had like just regular, you know, benches you'd find in a park or something, and there would be a person there with a Switch attached to themselves, and you could sit down next to them and play Mario Odyssey. But this year, the booth was super open. Like, they had a massive wall at the back that was covered in a screen. And, you know, some of the photos are up on the site already, and there'll be more up during the week. And that screen was the length of the booth. And, it would have, like, the logo up for Smash, you know, in sort of sections 2 and 4, but then 1, 3, and 5 would be showing different gameplay parts of Smash Brothers. It was ginormous. And the only other things they had were these two massive red pillars that just had Switch logos on them. But the backside of those was giant screens as well. So it was a very much a wider open booth. But, you know, they still have that same problem of every year there's always a line for games for Nintendo's booth. And behind the booth that you never see, that's where the overflow queue was. And when the public got in, that was full within like 10 minutes every day.
Jeez, and I think I already know the answer to both of these questions, but I'm going to go ahead and ask them anyway. So what generated the most buzz on the show floor, firstly, for Nintendo?
For Nintendo, it would have to be, in all honesty, Fortnite.
Wow. Really?
Fortnite being on Switch, it had lines consistently. It had a big presence in their booth. Smash had a bigger presence, but because of that whole debacle with, PlayStation, Fortnite was always being talked about, and especially because it hit Switch the day of their Direct, it was everywhere. Every time people were walking past it, they couldn't help but continually talk about Fortnite. And given that Epic Games had a massive Fortnite booth in the other hall, it's probably the only game that was in, like, both halls. Because it wasn't at PlayStation's booth, it was only at Nintendo's, and it just dominated.
Jeez, I'm surprised
there.
PlayStation didn't entrap Epic Games within their booth and not let anyone else play it.
No. So it surprised me because PlayStation, when I walked through before the public were let in, they had a massive space at the back of their booth that had nothing. And at first I thought it's because they're really proud of their carpet. And for those that don't go to E3, there is a sort of tradition now that if you have a booth, you need to have the plushest carpet you could possibly imagine.
Right.
Because when you walk into a booth for the first time and your feet sink into the soft, spongy carpet, you kind of just go, oh, because it's so good. So they had a big open space. Turns out when they were doing their, live presentations, that was for the public to sit down at. But yeah, so I honestly thought that was just, because they love their carpet. That's what it was for. But Sony themselves only had Spider-Man, Call of Duty, Destiny, the new DLC, and I think that was about it playable. I might have to double check that. But they only had like 3 or 4 total playable on the show floor for general access. So they really didn't have a lot there this year. And then across the way from them was Nintendo with Fortnite, Pokemon, Smash Brothers, Mario Tennis Aces. Starlink was in there, Overcooked was in there, so there was a lot going on in Nintendo's booth.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's really caught me by surprise there, that Fortnite generated more buzz, or perceivably more buzz than Smash Bros, albeit both of them were very, very popular, obviously. But I think that the main takeaway I've got from that is going to E3, forget about Smash, forget about Fortnite, forget about Cyberpunk. You go for the plushy carpet. It must be a bit of a barefoot trotter's absolute dream, just wandering through in without shoes.
Well, yeah. Once you get to the booth, you've still got to deal with the harsh marine type carpet everywhere else. But I'm not kidding. If you ask people, how is the carpet at the PlayStation booth, or how is the carpet at Nintendo or Square Enix or something, they will look at you and give you a serious answer because it's just so good. It's just so good.
Yeah, wow. Bit of an exclusive scoop there. Go suss out the carpet if you ever find yourself at E3. Very good.
The killer round.
Well, in that case, perhaps maybe other than Fortnite, what generated the most buzz on the show floor for non-Nintendo?
Look, outside of Fortnite, for the Nintendo side of things, the game that dominated everything, it depended on your point of view. It was either Spider-Man or Cyberpunk.
Sure.
Spider-Man obviously is out in a few months, and having played it, it's incredible. They really nailed the swinging mechanics, but having seen Cyberpunk in action, you know, I'm okay with both being number one. You know, gun to the head, if I had to choose, I'd go with Cyberpunk. It was just that impressive.
It certainly sounds like that, and that's pretty well the mail that's coming out of every media outlet going around, that Cyberpunk is definitely one to look out for, as if we didn't already know that. So we'll wrap things up by, Luke, I'll start with you. What was your non-Nintendo highlight of E3? Was it Cyberpunk or was it something else?
My non-Nintendo highlight? That's a hard one. It is. That's on Nintendo too. I was just going to say, my friend Pedro, it's an indie game coming to Switch that caught my attention. No, I'll go with Cyberpunk. That has to be it. It's so impressive. I want to play it. I want to play it right now and you know, just start exploring that world.
Yes, you and millions of others around the world, I think. What about you, Andrew? Did you have a non-Nintendo highlight from what you saw online of E3?
Oh, yeah, obviously Cyberpunk looks amazing, but, you know, us at home only really have the trailer to go off. So I think aside from that, The Last of Us 2 probably has to be my number one pick. That just looks absolutely phenomenal. Can't wait for that.
That was a hard-hitting section of gameplay they showed,
wasn't
it? It
certainly was, but yeah, Last of Us tend to not hold back in their demonstrations, that's for sure.
See, I didn't pick Last of Us for the same reason I didn't pick Spider-Man, is that they're both known quantities. We know what we were sort of getting gameplay-wise with Last of Us, that's why I didn't pick it.
Yeah, fair enough. I think probably my most surprising title was, I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey actually looks amazing.
Yes.
I haven't played the series for probably a few years now, but that world just looks so colourful and vibrant, and just, you know, it looks something I want to absolutely jump in and explore for the first time in a few years. So I'm actually really looking forward to that as well.
Totally agree. I've played a fair bit of Origins, the one before Odyssey, the one that's set in ancient Egypt, and it looks like they've just built on that and doubled down on the RPG, so bring on Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, Anthem's not really seeming to scratch much of that RPG vibe, so it looks like Assassin's Creed may actually sort of fill that void nicely.
Hmm. Very interesting. So what about you, Josh? What's your non-Nintendo highlight from E3 2018?
For me, it's got to be Spider-Man. My favorite superhero of all time, getting a game that looks really good after a few years of some kind of, not so much bad, but just kind of unspectacular games, but now Insomniac are one of my favorite developers, so they're perfect for this game, and I'm so excited.
Absolutely, you and me both. And it's not far away either. It's early September, isn't it, that it comes out?
Yeah, something like that. It's really soon. Doesn't feel like it, but it is.
Yeah,
September 7, I think. 7 or 14.
That
one of those.
Sounds roughly about right, I reckon. So yeah, I think everyone is the winner of E3 2018 this year, as far as all of us gamers are concerned, because we've got certainly a heck of a lot to look forward to on Nintendo Switch and every single other platform imaginable, even especially mobile, if you're into Elder Scrolls with some of the stuff that they announced at Bethesda. But yeah, certainly looking forward to Assassin's Creed Odyssey, looking forward to all the stuff Nintendo, and I'm going to be a little bit contrasting to you, Andrew, in that there are aspects of Anthem I'm very intrigued by. I think it may be a game similar to the likes of Destiny and The Division that might capture my interest for longer than either of those games did. It looks pretty sick being able to fly around in Iron Man-type suits.
The flight does look very, very good. But I just could never really get into Destiny, so, and it's looking very Destiny at the moment, so I'm looking forward to hopefully being, you know, won over, but at this stage, yeah, I'm still a bit iffy.
I did ask, I had a nice lengthy chat with one of the devs at the EA Play, and I did ask that question. I said, how are you going to avoid that open world Destiny release is cool, but then it has nothing to do?
Mm.
And they did say they've already got a plan of a lot of content coming out pretty consistently post-launch, so if that helps.
No, it'll be interesting to see how they approach that. But Of course, we're going to leave it there because I'm sure that all of us could speak for many more hours on all of the intricate details of E3 2018. But for the meantime, we'll leave it there, and we will be back again in a couple of weeks' time whenever the VookCast is scheduled next. But for now, you've been joined by Josh. Josh, where can we find you on the interwebs?
I'm at Mario Bones, Mario _ Bones, 2's better than 1. And I'm also at monamiibo.com, where I talk about all my favorite toys.
Very nice. And that's just clarifying, that handle is for Twitter, so you can see Josh on Twitter there. Andrew, where can we find you if we want to come hunt you down?
You can also find me on Twitter at Drowning Thunder. And that's about the only social media I really use these days.
Nice. And of course, some nice quality writing on Vooks.net, which I'll get to in a sec. And Luke, whereabouts can we find you on the dark corners of the internet?
On the dark corners? I don't think I can mention those places here. on the regular corners of the internet, I mean, you'll find me on you know, the Vooks.net for the next like week and a half posting content. For everything that we played Nintendo related at E3. But generally speaking, Maxi Geek, if you search that, you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram, pretty much everywhere. That's where you'll find me these days.
Very good. And you can find me, Chris, on Twitter via at BibbyBoy. That's BibbyBoy on Twitter, and a couple of other social media accounts, which I barely use. And of course, writing the occasional thing on Vooks.net, which is VOOKS.net. And please do visit the website for plenty of really good E3 coverage of all things Nintendo. And as Luke mentioned, there's still plenty of really cool hands-on impressions coming up of various titles shown at E3 from Nintendo and other developers. And in the meantime, we will keep churning out the content for you to enjoy. Thanks for joining us on the VookCast, and we'll see you next time. See ya.